essentially not there. Almighty and eternal Father, again we come before thee to worship thee in spirit and in truth. We thank thee for the assurance of thy word, these hours when thy people need the strength of that saith the Lord. We thank thee for the understanding in the midst of world of evil and turmoil, and the vast master plot of the forces of darkness, that thy kingdom is not only the delight of thy heart, the children of thy kingdom are going to be victorious in the earth because you have willed it. Because out of the vast panorama of human experience, that you've raised up apostles and given unto them the vision of things that were to come to pass. And you released this unto thy church and unto the peoples of thy nation, that they might know thy plan in the earth, and they might synchronize their thinking, their living, the forces of their intent, to accomplish the objectives of thy purpose, and to know that when all has been consummated, the mighty victories of thy kingdom, its light and its glory, shall shed out over the earth, and to thee shall go the praise. As we meditate upon the conditions that are happening in our midst, as we survey the situations before us, we pray that you will grant unto us an understanding heart, give unto each one of us the realization of our responsibilities, teach us to be alert, cause us to know that we stand on guard for the preservation of this great nation of thy kingdom, saying thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Thy name we ask it. Amen. Tonight to the subject of the three unclean frogs of Revelation. I think it again most important that we consider our relationship to the chain of events through which we have been passing. As we said this afternoon, America responds with great waves of emotion to the great historic events that present some of the tableau and some of the majesty of a great nation, and in the inauguration of a president, they were caught with the swelling emotion of the pageantry of America and of its history, and they all wished to believe as well as possible of the president whose forthright address was quite challenging, even though there were facets of it which were not acceptable. Within all the events of this hour, I can tell you that behind the scenes move forces hard sometimes to analyze unless one is aware of all the facts that are involved in the scene. There is no doubt that to Protestants everywhere, this election and the speed with which it was swept across the nation in a great rising force of minority movements and organizations behind a candidate who a little over a year or so ago was not known to very many people throughout the nation, and even in Washington, D.C., was not too well known, because I know of a great number of men, if you'd ask, where's Senator Kennedy from? They couldn't tell you whether he came from Indiana, Illinois, or where he came from, no. And the fact was that to the average government worker, he was just another congressman or senator from somewhere. And to those that were astute who watched the trend in the political life of a nation, they knew that he came from a powerful and wealthy Irish Catholic family from the Massachusetts Boston area. Those that knew more about it knew that he was connected with the Fitzgeralds and the Currys and all of the political strength and life that had once been out of Boston. Now we are well aware that the election has taken place and it has gone on by. But as we look out over it, there are several things which we cannot forget. It's rather generally believed by almost all of those in Washington who have been surveying the situation that the election was never decided on the basis of actually the number of votes cast. They do not believe that Kennedy actually won that election. I found that almost everybody believed that the election had really been won as far as numbers and in most of the deciding states by Mr. Nixon. One of the strangest things that I want to call your attention, and while you might say it's too late and has many parts in this picture, but it is most significant and should be considered. That was that one of the most active crusaders for Mr. Nixon and a very anti-communist authority in the field of his church, and one that supported Mr. Nixon quite thoroughly, was Cardinal Spellman of New York City.
Cardinal Spellman is known to be anti-communist, and he was known to back Mr. Nixon because of his anti-communism and his part in the Un-American Activities Committee. I think it a rather significant thing that while we are still evaluating everything in its proper attitude, Cardinal Cushing from Boston, Massachusetts, put pressure on Rome, and Rome gave an order to Cardinal Spellman silencing him during the remainder of the campaign, even as they formally had silenced Father Coughlin, making it impossible for Cardinal Spellman to support the New York State as one of the most important prelates of the Catholic Church, the election of Mr. Nixon. When I cite that again, I see another head rising. I see the symbols of the hierarchy power, and one recognizes that they well could have done this in order to have the full support go to a son of the church, which they would consider to be a great victory for them. But at the same time, one wonders why that in this measure they silenced their cardinal, even as they had silenced Coughlin, when he pointed out why he thought this was most important. One of the things that Mr. Spellman had thought about and had discussed was that there were a lot of anti-Christian forces that seemed to be supporting the candidacy and moved into a strange paradox of alignment behind the Kennedy power. He was the one who, in the church from whence he came, pointed out the vast amount of private and personal money that was thrown into this campaign and the possible involvement that it might lead to in our national history. I think it's rather interesting to note also the attitude of Mr. Truman during this campaign. For what came over this Master Mason, that he went around suddenly stumping all over the country for the election of Mr. Kennedy, when as a Mason he had withdrawn from the situation. We can well understand there had been animosity between he and Senator Kennedy when Congressman and Senator Kennedy in both places had opposed and had attacked the policies of Mr. Truman and Mr. Marshall when they deserved that attack as it related to the handling of Red Charter and the sabotaging of Sycheck. But at the same time, the sudden movement on the part of Mr. Truman, it's a very significant thing in the study of what transpired here in the United States. I think it most interesting that Mr. Truman suddenly went around throughout Texas. And as he was campaigning in Texas, he suddenly became angry at Baptists who were supporting Mr. Nixon on the basis of their religion, and he said, all these dash-dash Baptists ought to go to H. So this was a rather strange thing for a Baptist and a Mason to say about the Baptists of Texas, that they didn't support the candidate of the party, even though he was himself a Mason, and as such was very strangely moving into the wrong avenue. I think that a rather unexplainable factor involved in this. We kind of wonder whether this peculiar type of theology that is a part of the background of this church wasn't even becoming so contagious that they had Mr. Truman marching around and signing people the petition if they didn't vote his way. I think it rather interesting to note the reaction of Mr. Truman the other day after there was a study of the conditions in the election, and they were making a study as to how they had been supported throughout the United States. I only point this out because there are strange forces that were at work. We're not challenging that the president may not reverse himself on the position he supported in his campaign. We hope he will. But the fact remains that one of the things that stands out is that the farmers did not buy the program that Mr. Kennedy offered. That Mr. Kennedy supported when he was when he was but the candidate for the Democratic Party, the Democratic platform for the farmers and the farm plank in the Democratic platform. I'm going to call back to your attention again. It is a complete Soviet system of absolute control, including the permission to grow, the permission to sell, the administration, the numbers involved in hiring and everything else. It's a 100% Soviet program for the farmer. I think it rather interesting that during the last campaign, that one of the men that you and I might call one of the strangest egghead liberals in the United States was none other than Secretary of Agriculture Wallace. If you remember, in Mr. Roosevelt's administration was the kill the pig Wallace, fly under the grain Wallace. But in all of this, he was the man who thought he was Galahad on a white horse and followed Mr. Roderick, the strange yogi that came out of India and from Tibet and thought that he had the answers to everything. But at the same time, Mr. Wallace was considered a liberal. You know what Mr. Wallace said during the campaign in this year? He said, "I'm supporting Mr. Nixon because I can't support Mr. Kennedy because the farm program of the Communist Party is word for word the Soviet program for farmers in the Soviet Union." And that from a man who was so far to the left as a liberal with the Roosevelt days, that when anything gets farther to the left than that, it causes Americans to wonder with some consternation. Well, the fact was quite gratifying in that in studying over what those farm platform planks actually guaranteed, the overwhelming decision in almost all of the major farm areas of the nation was to give their voting impact, not, my friends, to Mr. Kennedy, but to Mr. Nixon. And strangely enough, even Bob Kennedy, as he cruised the country, came back to say, "Well, one area we couldn't carry, and the one thing we couldn't influence was the farmer. So since in most of these states, they don't have enough electoral votes, we'll concentrate on the bigger electoral vote areas. We'll move the machine, and we'll work the units of labor, the minority votes, and we will capture all that we can to bring about the election in these areas where there will be greater congressional representation and more electoral votes." I think it a rather significant thing, and this I report to you because it was generally known in Washington while I was there, and that was that after the election, Mr. Truman was one of those that surveyed the way they voted. And when he saw that the farmers didn't vote Democratic, he cursed and swore. He cursed the farmers and said he doesn't give a hoop in three or four dashes. What happens to the farmers anyhow? And then he went far enough to say, "There will be no lesson in the next few years." Well, let's hope that Americans learn only one lesson in the next few years, and that's to remain on guard night and day against creeping socialism, communism, and political interference by any hierarchy anywhere from any part of the world, because that shall be important. I feel that in the general trend that the president-elect has learned a few lessons concerning how America feels. I think he discovered in the days that preceded his inauguration that he had a Congress and Senate that was already aware of the temper of the people. I was told how the numbers of letters arriving on the desks of congressmen and senators had doubled in the last few days since the election. I was to discover that in every branch of the country, outside a few of the enthusiastical leaders who keep themselves somewhat modified in their position, there was an alarm among Protestants everywhere at what might be envisioned as an interference with phases of their liberty. They were not altogether too sure, even as of the last few days, that they could depend upon any guarantee of their civil liberties when those partisans might continue to oppose the thing they are against ecclesiastically, or whether they might be able to possess the same liberties and freedoms they had in the past. It is somewhat cited that they cannot depend upon any assurances that come out of the president's speech that their liberties would be protected on the basis of the fact that he repudiated in his speech and in his actions most of the plans that he supported when he ran on the platform. Of course, it is a good thing to repudiate those plans. At the same time, the repudiation is one that might be one of political expediency, knowing it impossible to carry them through. In the last few minutes, as I was glancing over at tomorrow morning's newspapers, there was something rather enheartening, because we have watched for some time men like Senator Dirksen and men like Senator Bridges that haven't been carrying a great forthright opposition to the things which need to be opposed, and suddenly I see something transpire. I see Senator Dirksen tomorrow morning say that having looked over some of the economic requests that are about to be made, that he is going to firmly read a refusal to confirm and to approve of some of the extreme liberal plans and designs of the cabinet which are going to be presented before the peoples of the United States. I think then that if this is what it took to wake up Senator Dirksen, it may be worthwhile, and a lot of these other senators in the United States. And he stated, I want it to be fairly understood, that the conservative forces, the Democrats and Republicans, are going on guard as of now to make sure that America's life shall not be changed and totalitarian authority will not move out in this hour to try to direct all of our destinies in the name of emergency measures. Strangely, again, we say that this is not raised in suggestion that there is not sincerity in the moves which the president might make from the standpoint of what he might conceive to be a superior knowledge about what our destiny should be from that which we might perceive it to be. However, because he might consider himself sincerely right, does not mean that he will have the support of the people of these United States who may be right when he is wrong. I do see and I do mention to you that that continual use now and that request of the JFK was merely an attempt to copy the FDR that had become so popular in carrying out the continuation of the policies of that early administration. We turn in this hour, as we see these things, to consider what it is that in motion is affecting our society. Where do we stand prophetically at this hour? We are without doubt in a historic hour that has been in effect for the last 25 to 30 years, especially. You were to turn to the 16th chapter of the book of Revelation, you discover there that there are forces that move out of the kingdom of darkness and that they blaspheme God in heaven, and they are the forces of evil getting ready for the consummation of what they hope will be their desire to take over the earth. Of course, they're moved out of the background of Asia and out of the kingdom of darkness. They're intense hatred of everything that is American, an intense hatred of everything that is Christian, an intense hatred of all Western Christian civilization. When the sixth angel sounds and pours out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof is dried up to prepare the way of the rulers out of the east, what is this talking about? One of the most powerful forces among nations were the barriers of the sea walls of humanity. If you turn inside the scriptures, you discover that the great waters of the scriptures are masses of people. That they're referred to seas of humanity, and the falling of Babylon into the sea is a symbol of it being swallowed up by the masses as and overthrow the thing which eventually must be cast out. But in this instance, he talks about the fact that the powers of darkness, the kingdoms of darkness, and the forces that gnash their teeth in their hatred against God's kingdom are somewhat held back by the force of the great river Euphrates. What was the symbol of the great river Euphrates? It wasn't just the stream that marks the geographical line upon the map that finds its close relationship to the areas of ancient Ur, the Chaldees, and ancient Babylon, but the kingdoms that were made up and came under the administration of the sultans and the sultanates, which ruled, you remember, after Genghis Khan's horde, were rolled back at his death into the great steppes of the areas of Tibet and into the great open spaces of Asia. Of course, there rose out of that Mongol invasion the sultanates of the Great Divan, as it was known. When we remember that under this, the power of the Turkish Empire and the power of a great many of the Muslim societies and sects, the rising chieftains, the Tartars, who had for a time been rolled back and had been subordinated now from the sultans who took over the areas of the Middle East and of the great lines that divided Asia from Europe, and the sultans carried on much of the attack which the heads of the Khan had carried on, but it was for their own increasing of authority and power. And when the mercenaries that rode with the sultans moved up into southern Europe and carried on the arms throughout, they often alternated between Tartar Mongols that came down from the northern steppes and the heads that moved under the crescent and the star. Mohammed Ghazan was also riding for little conquest. He rose to some heights of power. The one thing that stopped its expansion as it related to Europe was the knighthood of Christian civilization. There was no doubt that there were certain standards of chivalry that were observed both by Muslim knighthood as well as by Christian knighthood that had set the standard. There was no doubt a great battle continued to exist for some centuries between the powers of Mohammedism and the powers of Christianity, one fighting for the conquest of the Prophet and the rule of Mohammedism over the Middle East and hoped to extend it over eventually Asia and most of the world. That ambition was a part of their battle. Christianity had picked the flower of its knighthood to seek to wrest back again the Holy Land because it was important to them. Important because of the sacred incidents that had happened there. Important to Christendom because this was the land in which Christ had lived, and here were signs of early Christianity had their significant importance. More than that, though they did not always know why it was, they were moving back to defend and to hold an ancient title right. For the great knighthood of Western Christian civilization had come out of a people to whom Palestine had been originally given before they had gone into their captivity and before they had migrated through the Caucasian passes to form the great nations of Western Christian civilization. There can be no question, however, that the knighthood reached the impact of stopping the spread of Mohammedism into the heart of Europe. And thus it was it stayed out in the great lands of the ancient plains of Shinar, the great areas under the sultanate of Turkey. And in the days of Suleiman the Magnificent, it reached probably its highest height. And the Turkish power with that of Mohammedism and the great divan was known as the most powerful force. Nations sent their ambassadors to and fro. Even the nations of Western Europe, during the periods of truce, sent their ambassadors to this great shrine of Mohammedan power. However, as long as it remained strong, new political rising forces were beginning to move throughout all the areas of Asia. There must be noted that once the powers that created world communism, that gave the world power Marx and then gave them the political philosophy to spread it, started spreading the doctrines of the Karl Marx philosophy. And when we find that the same powers that had brought Genghis Khan towards and challenged against Western Christian civilization were now spreading the forces of Marxism, and that the instance of the revolution was moving in the areas to the north, that there was one thing that was realized as a political obstacle to the sweeping movements of the hordes out of the Russians, and would be one of the obstacles towards the gathering of the hordes of Asia and once more marching them against the peoples of Europe. What was that thing? It was that Mohammedism was no longer a part of the great dragon. That once now that the ancient empires of the Sultan and the ancient Mohammedan realms had moved into a cycle of a couple of hundred years of history, that had them isolated from the hordes of previous Asia that had once been joined with them, they became a powerful stream in known as the River Euphrates in its impact. These were the peoples of the land of the Turkish Empire. These were the peoples of the stream of Ishmael and the peoples that came out of the strange Mohammedan Mount Seir. Because of this, therefore, their power, their nomadic resistance, and their strength was considered as an obstacle against any of the Asiatic forces ever marching into what's known as the peoples of Western civilization itself. I think one of the strangest things involved in this, therefore, was that the drying up of the empire of the Sultanate, which had existed from the period of the success of Genghis Khan and his death to that period in which the Soviet Revolution was being formed and the hordes out of Asia were again by the powers of Antichrist to be gathered again to be hurled against Christian civilization. It's rather significant, therefore, that in World War I, one of the things that transpired at this time was the overthrow of the power of Turkey as a barrier to anything. For while in that period of time the land of Palestine was taken back under the administration of Anglo-Saxons, and from that time on the mandate of Palestine had passed over to the peoples again of the house of Joseph and of Israel's destiny, it had ended for the first time. In a great number of years, the administration over this land by the Turks. Remember that for 1,335 years under the Julia calendar, that the Turks and the Mohammedan peoples had held sway over Palestine. But destiny had declared that this was to pass back in the end of this period of measure and of prophecy into the hands of the people that constituted the proper mandate of God's Israel. And there it was going to remain until the climax of the hour in which we live, when the abomination of the desolator was to come in and try to take possession of the Holy Land. There it would remain until it was once more delivered by the hand of God's judgment, by great earthquakes, by battles and wars, in which again, as those usurpers who have taken over that Holy Land, will be destroyed in the area of their usurpation. Thus it is that we can say at this time that the occupiers inside of Israel, or Israeli, or Palestine, are the abomination of the desolators who have moved into the holy place. But out of World War I came the the experiences that surround the leadership of the Arab regions that were under Paul Lawrence and the fulfillment of prophecy under General Allenby. And when finally the Turks surrendered their swords before the conquest of that war, the Turkish Empire and the empire which united all Muslim kingdoms and all their princes was no longer a great and mighty unit. And the prophecies of the scriptures that we have now witnessed the drying up of the river Euphrates, which water stream was the water streams of the peoples that made up these empires. Now nothing stood between Europe and Asia. Nothing stood in the way of the powers and the rulers of the East that they would have to conquer and negotiate with. In fact, in the time that you're now living, the very peoples of Turkey and the peoples that live in these areas of the East have only one source of protection outside of their own strength, which united with your leadership might be strong, but apart from that, they have only one strength, and that's to turn to the Christian nations of the world, and especially to the United States, to assist them against the Soviet seizure of their territory or the violation of their ancient and their rightful homeland. We must remember that one of the strongest allies we have had throughout the years, ever since the end of World War II, is Turkey, and that Turkey has permitted us to place missile platforms there and launching sites in which we have the areas of possible Russian launching of aggression under the very hammer of American military strength. So we point this out to you because this proceeds in the 16th chapter of Revelation. These words, I saw three unclean frogs, unclean spirits like frogs, come out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. Someone said, what are these three unclean spirits like frogs? Wasn't so long ago, just a few days ago, I heard some naive clergymen say, oh, these three spirits were communism, fascism, and Nazism. Well, that's a rather strange combination because this isn't exactly what it constituted. It wasn't talking about fascism, with which we disagree, Nazism, which is not an American institution, and it was talking, however, about the evil powers. Now, communism was involved because it talked about the beast. That which comes out of the mouth of the beast would very well be identified as the political philosophy of socialism and world capitalism. So when we talk about these three unclean spirits like frogs, they are the spirits of devils, working their strange phenomena and miracles, going forth among the rulers of the earth order of the world to gather them to a great and mighty battle at the great day of God Almighty. Behold, I have come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he be naked and walk in his own shame. This, of course, is written to the church, and as such it relates to the fact that the only garment of divine standard is the righteousness of God. But the only covering which men wear before God is whether they are enveloped in the framework of his standards of righteousness, and instead of imputing their own righteousness in their own way, they accept God's laws and God's standards and claim the impact of his atonement and claim the justification of his grace and the standards of his law. This means that the people who make Christian civilization and who make up the great society of Christians of the Western world are the only people who are looking for the appearing of God to intervene in human affairs, and therefore their garments of faith in the things which he have had to say. We are faced with the fact that these spirits go forth as devils, and are gathering men together in the place in the Hebrew tongue called Armageddon. However, the general temptation concerning Armageddon, as it's referred to as the great final struggle by Enoch, who had his instruction ages ago by the angels who were briefing concerning this hour. This no longer is a battle fought in one narrow valley and is no longer isolated to a single place, for he told that this great struggle will be fought all over the world, even as great battles were fought in the valley of Armageddon. So it is that in the days of Enoch there had been no battles of Armageddon, but he was taught that a great and final battle, a battle against the Prince of Babylon, the incarnate form of Luciferian forces in the earth, and a struggle against his children and his household would take place. Strange enough, as Enoch was told about such a struggle, he was given to understand that from all the corners of the world, from every racial group and for every people, to serve every false religion and every false pattern of idolatry would come to hell. He was given to recognize that all things which would not accept Jesus as the Christ, all nations and all powers would become involved. He was told that they would use all of their powers in the field of economy and commerce to manipulate and try to create a catastrophe of encirclement and downfall for Christian civilization. He was told they would wage a war against it. He was told that every false religion would pour forth its support against the resistance of the nations of the Western world, and that out of the dragon would come an attempt to form a super world government under which all nations and all men would pass, with the exception of God's kingdom that would fight for the retention of its liberty. Now, when one considers that Enoch understood this and then said with Enoch, for in that day shall the very word of heaven come with 10,000 times thousands times thousands of defense and judgment, and there shall be great victory and deliverance for the kingdom in that day. I think that as far as prophetic history is concerned, we who have watched the developments of the last few decades can well say the drying up of the empire of the Turks and the power of the Mohammedan forces between Europe and Asia was the drying up of the river Euphrates. It made way for the movements of the kings of the East. The planting of the great strength and power of this influence, communist agents had moved into the Middle East. Tied up with their close alliance today with Zionism and with their secret commitments, they stir trouble constantly in order to bring about inner tribal trouble and to open the way for the betrayal of the Middle Eastern area. When we see these words, the three unseen spirit black frogs. The word frogs are used here because it's the continuity of an ancient symbolism that runs down through the history of your race. There were three things that were marked in the symbolism of your race back in its ancient times as identified with evil and with secret and occult evil. One of them was the symbol of the serpent, the symbol of the frog, and then they made and used the symbol of a strange type of wizard which was used upon the emblems of the various occult forces of the false religions of Asia. So these emblems were always considered to be the symbols of that which were identified with the modern swine. And the three unclean frogs were symbolism that back in the ancient heraldry of Israel and among the mystery schools, the frog was the symbol of utter evil, and it was the symbol of the extent of that evil to move out upon either dry land or upon water to carry out its objective. Now, the book of Revelation identifies these ancient patterns. It doesn't have to leave it up to your imagination. It tells you these three unclean frogs are the spirit of devils. They move out of the mouth of the dragon. Let us remember what the dragon consists of. We well identify dragon today with Asia wherever we see the dragon. No country identifies itself with the dragon more than Asia. I think that it's nice to have beautiful clothes and great clothes, but I think we could do well without having dragons in our road clothes. There are a lot of things about America that would be better than a dragon, because this sign of the dragon is not acceptable to those that understand its significance in this prophetic hour. The dragon is the symbol of Asia. The dragon is the symbol of our enemy. Even in the heraldry of our race, hidden in the tradition and the stories of the opposition of the Knights of the Round Table and the dragon, and St. George and the dragon, those, my friends, were not just fictitious stories. They were great symbolical stories of the struggle of the great round table of defense and Christian civilization with its hidden mysteries against the powers and the evils of Asia seeking to destroy the kingdom of God. Strangely enough, the seed of the dragon is not confined to the people who come out of China or out of Japan or out of Asia or out of the various areas where we see the Mongol features and the Asiatic types. For the dragon involves all of the offspring as well as Lucifer, who has established the dragon emblem over these lands and territories. When we talk about the offspring of Lucifer, we are definitely talking about a people that have grown up in the earth as the offspring of the violation of divine law, the unassimilatable descendants of Lucifer and his fallen angels. When Jesus turns to a group of people and says, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father you will do," he was not merely making a parody of events. He was deciding as he pointed them out, that they were the offspring and the progeny of Lucifer, and they thought like their father, they acted like their father, and he didn't expect them to be any different than their father. That their father was a liar and a murderer and warred against God was one of the things which Christ declared. I think it's quite obvious that Christians should recognize everywhere that when God talks about his kingdom and when embodied is the man Christ Jesus, he refers to the great spirit of God filling the heavens and the earth as the father even of the body which he resided in, and said, I was before all things and I gave the law, and thus identifies himself with the everlasting Father. So let us think concerning the identification of the embodied man. He said, I am of my Father and you are of your Father. He challenges his disciples and all the peoples of this race of Adam and said, if I be lifted up, I'm going to draw all Adamites or all men unto me. Therefore, the ultimate Christianity and rising Christian civilization upon white men had been ordained and declared by the very words of Christ himself. There has not been a universal sweep of all the peoples that walked upright or wore clothes or a lack of them throughout the world of Jesus Christ. But it is a fact that all white nations have embraced him, and all the people who are the seed of Adam have turned and have in this hour found themselves drawn to this identity. As a further establishment that the Adamic race is the white race, as the student of prophecy and of the book of Ezekiel would have to come to the conclusion of, since it was the last race to rise in the earth, and since the other races were here existing before it, as described so clearly by Ezekiel. Faced with these facts, then, the children of God's kingdom have come from the origin of the fatherhood of God, which had begotten them, and the enemies of God's kingdom, who led the races and nations of the world, who were not of the same seed, but had been created by God to serve and worship him and to live in the earth, but had been seduced by the darkness. They were now the victims of the children of the dragon. When we talk about the dragon, don't misunderstand the ability of the scripture to identify the dragon. A lot of people sometimes think that there are impugned groups of people to this moment, and that when we see emblems in Revelation, that there is ministerial license in saying the dragon represents this people or the dragon represents that people. But when we talk about the dragon empires, they are the empires under the dragon, which dragon the scripture tells us about. Over here in the book of Revelation, again, I turn to the 12th chapter of Revelation because of its great significance as a key to the understanding of this book. We read here these words concerning the dragon. Behold, I saw the great wonder in heaven, the great dragon. The dragon stood before the woman to devour her child as soon as it was born. I think it's interesting to note that there is a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. The dragon fought with his angels. Now, when you talk about the dragon, who is it talking about? The great dragon that was cast out is that old serpent, the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world and which was cast under the earth with his angels. So, if you want to know who the dragon is, it is Satan and his offspring in the earth. You say, how do you know? Well, the scripture here tells you who he is. Tells you what his power is and what it consists of. Tells you that the dragon has horns. And in the book of Revelation, talks about the great sword out of the dragon's mouth, the great seed of the dragon that moves out against God's kingdom. And you want to find the seed of the dragon, you find out who Jesus said were the dragon's children. And I can understand why when a person realizes this, he discovers a new set of chosen people. For the very moment that you find out who the dragon seed is and find out who the seed of God is, you discover that the people that constitute Christianity and make up the great mass of the white race are not only the chosen household of God, but they are the seed of the Most High. They are the peoples that make up Christendom, and you will not then ever again turn over the chosen blessings and subjects of God to a people of hate him, who trace their origin and destiny back to a fallen angel that intermingled with the violation of the divine law with the peoples of the earth. The false prophets of our time have been engaged in supporting the plans of Lucifer. When I turn into Revelation, I see that evil spiritual forces, evil forces of dark and spiritual intent, move out from among the descendants of the dragon. I tell you today that all anti-Christian institutions seem to be in the rig at this hour. They all of them seem to be supporting the socialization of our society or its outer concept, God says. The system of the driving has given unto us world communism. One of the documents that we called your attention a week ago that we brought back from Washington, under the seal of the United States government and out of its own files and records from the intelligence reports of the Chief of Staff of the United States Intelligence in Siberia, was to the effect that out of 384 commissars that ran the revolution, 300 were Jews and 264 of them came from the United States. Under the second phase of those documents came again the statement that the entire revolution and Bolshevik movement was run by Russian Jews of a Greek-ish type who had come from the United States. Now, isn't that a rather strange thing, but it's under the file records of the United States government seal, and we have them concerning that origin. This is a part of the seed of the dragon who have built the power of the dragon system and to build up the force of the dragon horde and to gather all Asia under the symbols of the dragon in order that they might move against the throne of God and overthrow it in the midst of the earth. Now, we will know here that the evil frogs come out of the mouth of the beast. The political system of world socialism and communism today is the beast system, or the political system, the last of its political system, to gather the peoples of all powers in the earth against God's kingdom. This political system has great dangers because they are ruined and seducing spirits. They have moved out of that political system to make political allies out of nations all over the world. Inside of the United Nations, which is a part of the beast system, now hear this. The United Nations is a part of the beast system in the world today. It is in violation to every phase of divine instruction. It is the joining together of God's kingdom with the kingdoms of darkness. You have been told to come out from among them and be separate. It's a part of Babylon's political power. As I have reported to you, I was greatly cheered by foreign service experts who talked about the unworkability of this institution. For under the guise of history Babylon, even the President of the United States must have been seduced by one of these strange spirits. For he went before that World Assembly of Nations, where he still retained a great balance of power, and asked them to recognize 19 out of 21, and later 24, African cannibal voodoo tribes, which in no sense of the word are Christian at all. Someone said, how can you explain this act of Mr. Eisenhower? I explain it as a seducing force of evil spirits out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the false prophet. I don't think that Eisenhower was too bright. I'm not mourning the fact that he's in Gettysburg. I'm just hoping that he stays there. I look out over the past history of the last few years, and there are very few things that I can consider that we can point to and say, this was an accomplishment. In fact, the only major event that we can find that we can point to is when he told the Jews to get back out of Egypt after they had originally invaded him. And had he not said that, we would have started on a dozen several years ago. He only postponed it. He sent them home. And they went home grudgingly, but promised to never forgive himself. And if there was another last move, it was pretty much. He was with Cuba, with Cuban Revolution, has long since been living beyond its proper time. It should have been cut off at its beginning when they first violated the regime in America, and they violated their treaties, confiscated their properties, and started on the road to Cuba. America is a broken, powerful nation. We are responsible for what it is we live in. We are responsible for the influence of our power. So we turn now to this picture, the fact of all the north of the beast. The beast, without any doubt, is a political philosopher. The beast is the fifth power of political philosophy, the law. The beast system is the system of world communism and world socialism. Analyzing our economic problems tonight, the beast system has provided a great part of the dangers we are engaged in. They have provided the political background for the organization of men. And they have been supported all the time by Mr. Babylon the Great. Mr. Babylon the Great is economic. In fact, the three divisions that you have is political, social, and economic. and religious, and of course the social and religious factors are tied together. The impact of the false system, of the false prophets, the proclaiming things which are not true, is to bear testimony actually against the real truth of the gospel of Christ. The false prophets today largely embody all of those that deny that Jesus is the Christ. And all institutions that are tied with it, that make war against his teaching, that are against the nations that he's seen. But the false prophet doesn't always operate outside the nation. You've got false prophet operating in the schools, in some of your schools, in your high schools. You've got false prophets in your colleges. Whosoever continues to bear the testimony of the false prophet finds himself identified with that phase of his work. There are false prophets that have come out inside the very church, and we were warned by the Apostle Paul to rip out for many of these lessons of Lucifer, so that it proves angels of the ant. No wonder. After Lucifer himself appears an angel of light, and therefore his ministers have put on a right appearance, and they proclaim they have a solution to all problems, and how they would like to assist in the deliverance of the people. And they praise the advancement, as they call it, of communism and socialism, and they attack the great fundamental principles of our American life. Inside of this, we listen to the false prophet making it no longer an important thing that you identify your faith with Christ and that you remain firm to this cause. I think that we survey the problem of this hour as it relates to our faith. That the greatest problem that American Christianity possesses today and the great Christian nations of God's kingdom is that the false prophet, in weakening our resistance against all the ideas of the enemy, is trying to bring upon us a great conflict for opposing every bad. Did you know that inside of some of our seminaries, they try to give the student a great conflict if he's not willing to embrace all the abuse? Oh, they don't call it exactly that. They say, now you, as a Christian, must practice Christianity. You must love everybody. You must give every man his turn to speak. You must embrace all religions. You must recognize and respect all men's attempts to serve or worship, and that all men are reaching for good, regardless of which way they go together. Well, I don't accept that. Because God's kingdom is set with us, his witnesses, that you are all of God. He said, here Israel, the Lord thy God is a jealous God. He wants your service and your worship, the proclamation of his name, and he doesn't want you to share that with any other theology, and he doesn't want you to repeat before us, and he doesn't want you to bow and accept. I think that if there is any one thing that marks the inadequacy of Mr. Eisenhower's administration, you know, a lot of people become very magnanimous when somebody goes out of power. They suddenly feel sorry, they say, for the nostalgic remembrances of a tired old man that lived in the White House for 2 or 8 years and played golf all over the nation and the world. They feel sorry for him because he was a general of the enemy for so long. I'm sorry for you because he had had greater victories without him, and he would have been better off if he never made the White House. You know, some people can look real stern up at me, and then when I say something like that, they get even stern. They don't bother me at all. I'll be used to that before that. If you're a fair Republican, if you've got to hide your head before Republican sins because you don't want to acknowledge them, then you'll never help the Republican Party. And Democrats who used to cover up the errors and transgressions of the evil things that happened under their administration will never help their party. If you're Americans, you rise under the great call of the kingdom of Christ to throw out the error in both parties and work for that which is good and bear that which is evil, that America will retain its greatest position of leadership. Now you may say, why are you going after Mr. Eisenhower at this moment? Do you know the one time when I was most ashamed of this man's presence? I was ashamed enough when he brought Khrushchev over here. I thought that was one of the great debacles in the history of our nation and had terrible impact. But when he was flipping around the world and he was shaking hands with everybody and had gone on this great fight for himself, thought that being the great president for all the world, that it was going to be most important, and when he went to India. And then his masters came out by the millions to see this potentate of the land that had heard so much, and the land that gave so much grain, and the land that they heard so much about. They came out and they bowed before him as the potentate and said, may he live forever. And when he rode in, they constantly said, the king of America has arrived. Well, I could stand that because they don't know any better. But when they put
the President of the United States before a strong attorney, the assassin battle, the rights of Lucifer, and the systems of the present temple, the drama victory fever, and in the completely other village of the assembly of India, where all this paganism is observed.
And as the President of the United States approached a Princeton fair with a blue and red aircraft, and he dipped his finger in it, and he put the postmark of tyranny upon the head of the President of the United States. Let me tell you at that moment the height of Eisenhower had his great decision.
Had he at that moment rested off and said, I must remind you that I understand the intent, and this may be to you an act of kindness, but I am a Christian. But I come from a Christian nation, and I cannot permit the bomb of a pagan god upon my forehead. His stock would have gone up all over the world. And the stock of a white man in the Western world would have gone up a whole lot more. I've done it like the fire. For throughout the rest of that day, the President of the United States moved around with the mark of the beast right on his forehead. Remember that. But I didn't know that was the mark. Anytime you take the mark of a pagan god in order to have the political speed relations with his children, you are not making the testimony that a man of your race is supposed to make, for you are my witness to the uttermost parts of the earth, and you should proclaim that to say, I know other gods before me, but I am only God, and at least this is what you can do in this temple, which is your own, to see out the river and worship. You can see that the mark of Calvin and the other goddesses of Asia have not set on this temple to see out the river.
And from that moment on, I said, may we never be blessed. And may we never again have leadership that we are back up against. I may be opposed, as I will be, to positions of the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church. I may be opposed to operations of false and extended concepts of self-control by means of purgatory and other procedures which don't exist and over which they have no control. And I may see no necessary significance in any essential act of the Christian to make the sign of the cross as the sign of the prayer, but this is what I'm going to say. I can far more tolerate the sign of the cross than I can the sign of a pagan god upon the head of the President of the United States. Yes, the spirits of the unseen tribes would it was. They were moving behind the scenes in every nation in the world. They were not overlooking your nation. They were not overlooking countries of Britain or of Germany or any other nations in the Western world. They designed the powers for the beast system and for the false prophet to secure a position upon the false god, even though they should have been defenders of the faith, that they would respect all religions and they would permit them to call it gifts. Now I want to call your attention to the fact that every religion that denies that Jesus is the Christ is a false religion. It may have some elements of truth because Satan filled up the mind full of wisdom before he fell and he hasn't forgotten everything he knew. And it's almost impossible for a man to be wrong on anything if he knows anything at all, because things with the final knowledge around things that are apparent become a phase of truth. But the fact remains that as far as religious systems and the worship of pagan gods, the acknowledgement of their authority or their greatness must be recognized to be superseded always and ever by the eternal bodies, master of the universe, who has no gods around them, and all of these who proclaim themselves gods or no gods. And I can tell you a mystery, the only ability that God recognizes are the kingdom of his spirit. His seed is in you, just to conform to his own image. And the only people that God ever therefore recognizes as offspring is the race of which you are part. And he inspired the psalmist to say, you are gods, and all of you are the children of God. Why do you die like men? Why do you surrender to these powers of darkness? And why do you take the feast off? But it's your father's purpose to make you stand forth in glory and righteousness and the rising power. Walk under his own image, and an hour on the earth is going to know the power of God from one end of it to the other. For which the nations of this world have got to become the nations of the kingdom of God, and the United States of America, and Britain, and Germany, and the great nations, and the right race,
are going to rule himself from one end of the other. They're going to bring all the officers, all the rangers, and they're going to bring civilization where they will. And it isn't, my friends, by the plans that the Democratic platform had, where I think even now, Mr. Kennedy realizes he can't implement them.
He may become a greater man than he thinks in spite of himself, because of the hand of destiny, the movement of God, and the things of his life. And they say this, they will not accept that there will be anyone who will supersede the person of Christ, in the end, or throughout all Edison time. I think the most important lesson that President can learn today is to not be ashamed to proclaim the one and only true God, and not seek to modify or nullify anybody to get their friendship or their good opinion by accepting and extending error in the thought realm where they live. We as Christians are to be his witnesses to bear testimony to truth. You don't have to apologize for the fact you're Christians. You don't have to apologize for anything. In fact, one of the strangest things is that there are some of these Christians going around the world apologizing for your success. And people start apologizing for their God because other than don't have him. And then they start apologizing for their success, and then they beat themselves over the back because they have no things, and they say this is a sign we must have been sheltered.
There are rewards, you know, for industry and initiative in business. And I'm going to tell you the reason why the great nations of God's kingdom and have nations are in spite of the devil. Because left up to the true system and to the false prophet and to his economic and mystery Babylon program, he would have not only flooded you of everything you had, but he would have broken by the processes of his taxation, by the conspiracies of his double handling of funds, by the false monetary system that you have secularized, you would have taken everything to get from you, but you have said rescue of bounty that you see has produced your engineering, manufactured, and understanding expanded so fast that even the devil couldn't wrap up the riches as fast as you produced it. And you can say thank God for that, because we have been blessed in spite of the devil. And I'm going to tell you this. These forces at work, which have established the world order system used by Mr. Babylon, which have built their one-way government, which have extended socialism and trying to extend it in every one of their battle, and one of the greatest battles right here in America in the next 300 days, is going to be your battle to keep yourself and being swept into the deep system of world socialism. And at the same time, find an adequate solution to your own economic problems of providing for those that need and for extending the necessary situations that must be protected under your form of government to see that people become not the victims of revolution, not the hard situation. You're going to have to adopt measures that will protect industry and protect labor and protect you. Measures that will make America strong and make it able to survive. You're going to have to break the power of the unseen forces behind the scenes. And I think when the nation rises to its responsibility and they receive its best protection, didn't come out of its organizations, it came out of dedication on the part of leaders inside their government. They may suddenly tell Babylon, we've had all we want of you, we're tired of paying tribute to you, you've brought us catastrophe and destruction, and now we will correct. Because it tells me in my Bible that Babylon is going to be swallowed up in the sea. And the more quickly it's swallowed up in the sea, the better off it's going to be. Well, this mystery Babylon is the great abomination of the earth. And in every avenue of its ferocity, it wages war against you. No one of the most dangerous things that affects men is fear. If the religious system that men embrace keep them in fear, and their approach to truth is obscured by fear, they can then be impelled by false prophets to do anything because of the fear that's held over their head. There is one reason why the gospel of Christ set men free, because they got the fear doctrine. They know the great Father with a wrath and purpose and has established his kingdom for goodness that will be funded with all the power and all the ancient force of his purpose. But they do not serve him out of fear. When men start to serve through wrath and through dedication to truth, then, my friends, they work for liberty and they're not born from every political supremacy of a passing election. There is no doubt in my mind that more corruption was used in the last election than any election America has ever had. But I am aware tonight that almost everybody knows it. It's a general statement around Washington, D.C. that when Mr. Kennedy walks down the street, he always has one president back. Every time he sees two men, one of them is a gentleman. Now that means that at least the
a vote was not a mandate, and knowing that the country was half opposed to him, he's got to perform for the whole country, or he's not going to perform for any of the country very soon, because they're impeaching that they have to, if he challenges the security of our nation too far. It's my opinion that he is going to be forced to perform in ways that he may now not even understand or know. Now, as we said this afternoon, there were great elements of statesmanship inside the speech. Maybe they were just being born into a new way of vision for us. We will soon discover this. The next few days are going to tell what the next 100 days are going to be like. But I want you to know right now that these three unclean states, the new doctrine, the religious and the political, and the economic forces of evil, are even now, so to not control, you're getting ready to gather the great herds of the black and the brown and the yellow world against you. And if you want to know who leads them, you are the children of the dragon and of the serpent that Jesus identified so strongly in Jerusalem when they sought to crucify. We are really in one of the greatest hours of human history. What is a greater power than the force of evil? There is a greater power than its strange metaphor. The metaphor that has worked among you has been this morning to the same thing. Did you ever stop to realize the evil and vibratory forces of darkness have been mesmerizing people and hypnotizing by the repetition of error, hypnotizing them by the mass popping of error, and driving out the great nation like this place of God's kingdom, except the entire format of all the new designs all over the world? In fact, I think they get hypnotized by that great eye that sits in their front room. They see every day after day the world order being repeated in front of them. They listen to the swanking talks of it. That realize they listen to the eye of the beast that was going to give them power to speak in their own front room. Remember, the end of the age must be here. Well, one of the things that we are told about the beast system, and it said there was an image of the beast to speak. And you watch and listen to the image of the beast speak. I tell you that every time you look at your television set, you're watching the image of the beast speak. And the image of the beast is the whole foundation of the world order, its philosophy, its thinking, its ways of life being projected into your consciousness and the power of the beast is speaking. Now, it doesn't hypnotize, it doesn't mesmerize the sons and daughters of God who are separated by the truth. Who understand that they are in a battle against the enemy, who do not commit themselves to be blown out. They are covered by the guidance of God's Spirit, and they are seeking God's Spirit to keep them in prayer. And that's why they move across you a feeling of resentment day after day as you listen or watch something that utterly is dependent to you, something that is diametrically opposite to the philosophies of God's kingdom and the things that you see and believe. Yes, but by the same meaning, by the children that lack this vision of the ignorance of this hour being hypnotized into listening to these questions. Friends, you're not. The Asiatic forces and the whole heads of the areas of Russian establishment, these countries are arming for a war. This war they've been preparing for a long time. In fact, ever since communism first started to start, they started a debate about how it was going to gobble up capitalistic nations. Every time it comes around to talk about peace or coexistence, it starts to tell you how it's going to gobble you up until it's through. Even Mr. Khrushchev couldn't resist this when he was on a friendly visit, supposedly, under the ignorant, perhaps, of Mr. Eisenhower. Well, the fact, you know, is that during such a period of time, they continually boasted how the gas fire you up. They planned on it, they worked for it, they think for that day. This is because we put it together, we're gathering them together for this great battle of Armageddon. Now, if there's any one thing I'm not a bit worried about, it's the battle of Armageddon. I have less fear of Armageddon than any peace table that you might send this amount to sit down. But if I look back over our history, we've lost more peace than we've ever lost the world. We've just never lost any major war we ever got into. But we've lost every peace we've ever gotten into outside of the United States. You know that? We were able to find entries out of the terror for a greater war and for greater danger. Yes, the 300,000 tribes are at work. They move out even in the south. But the Spirit of God is also at work. Now, what's the passion for its opposition? The Most High God said, I'm going to pour out my Spirit upon all my sons and all my daughters. I'm going to give them the vast station of the kingdom. I'm going to challenge them are one of the great signs that the prophet Joel tells us is. But under this sign, we're going to remove all these economic and political parasites from our country that have been exploiting the people, that have been robbing the masses, that have placed the forest, the undue burden of its taxation, that have been borne away with all the bounty of God's blessing that come upon the trees of Israel. And the planterworm and the cantaloupe and the caterpillar and the locust are no longer going to take the great blessings of God and make it their sparrow. You know, there's one thing that I write in the book of Ezekiel that talks about the climactic events of the end of the age. It again is Stephen I upon you, and in closing, I would call this to your attention. It tells us that in the impact of these events, it says here in the 39th chapter, that in these events, that these herds out of Russia and out of Moscow, when they come against thee, they're going to be broken and torn back. Only a sixth part of them will cause to come from the north south and will bring upon these mountains. They will turn me back, but a sixth part of them, and will cause you to come out of the north south. I will smite the bow out of thy hand. I will cause thy arrows to fail in thy right hand. This promise of God means to me that they would have one weapon that's going to be successful against God's children. They're going to knock their missiles down with intercepted missiles. The very hand of God, the very intervention of the mysterious power, the herds of heaven, they're going to stop their attack against you. They're going to strike down their arrows. They're going to destroy all of their projectiles. And then thou shalt be broken and fall upon the mountains of Israel, thou and thy bands, and the people that are with thee, and you're going to destroy thee and give thee to the ravenous birds of every sort, to the beasts of the field, and thou shalt be devoured. Now I want you to know that as God talks about this, and he talks about this defeat that comes upon the enemies of his kingdom, he said so. In that day, I shall this great nation of God's kingdom out of his real Israel, out of his land of one world villages, come a true desire for justice and for righteousness and peace. For that's the law I will take you to. So that we be talking about a great area of peace, a great drug in our hearts for peace. I desire to see that all men live in justice and righteousness. You know how that peace is going to come? Well, war will be disarmed because America is going to disarm. But when that comes, we will have already won the victory over the heads of the Russians, and we will have defeated them, their arms will be broken. And nobody's going to gather the materials out of the field, or out of the forest, or out of the mines to make arms. They're going to burn all the weapons and consume them. We're going to spoil every one of those that spoil this, and we're going to take back everything that everybody robbed us from. That's for us, the Lord God. You know what the cry is going to be that day, don't you? We have taken back everything that we have had robbed from us. So they will even carry away the paper when that day comes. Tell us that I don't like that, or I didn't like that page, but I want it. Whereas this generation sees the hand of God, whenever something happens, they all run out of the country. They're so afraid the North is going to wake up. They say, what are you talking about? What are the people they're running? You know who they are? If you don't know who they are, they're making a difference. The people are running, they're getting out, and they're moving to other parts of the world. They're all in the ice with people, no country's their home. They're only in the military, they didn't use it, but they want to live it out. All right. Everything we do to carry out the spell. As we said, one of the strangest things, Mr. Eisenhower did. That was a week ago yesterday, was when he took them off and put it one step farther out of the daily ranks by saying that no American citizen could hold gold outside of the United States. If they'd have to get it sold by the 1st of June, they'd be felons, of course, just like the people that hold gold now, if they've held it since the decree of Mr. Roosevelt. Of course, it's never quite established as to whether that constitutes or anything else, but the matter is still known. But all of these who have been running out of America and settling down in Rio de Janeiro and in Mexico City and a lot of these other places, and still holding their citizenship so they can run back to the Bronx in New York and handle their business while their families live outside of the country. They say that they're about ready to pull the rug out from under us and let their bonds fall and their Russian communism, their finance, drop on us, and so they've got their families out of the way. But they want the last drop of business they can get just as long as there's any to get, and they keep coming back in and out of America trying to get it. That's one thing I noticed the other day. There was one of these conferences on the part of many of them going on in Mexico City. And the other day, just before an order, that great big DC-8 passed and passed up on the takeoff, never got very far off the ground. And these fellows started pouring out of the rear hall, just as fast as they could jump out. I don't blame them for jumping out, because if they didn't, they'd have been incinerated. But they had a chance to see who they were. Mr. Goldberg, Mr. Ginsberg, and Mr. Cohen, and all the rest of them came jumping out the car. How about how they had escaped out of this situation, and possibly all of them got out. But where were they going? The day before inauguration, they were all rushing down to Mexico City. Yet there was this big star among these people. Why? They would have asked the people on the run, because they're trying to figure out what to do with their goal. Now, whether Mr. Eisenhower did this by intent, or maybe he thought he was blocking up the buried drain and wanted to get some credit on this before the new administration came in, I'll tell you what he's done. Every Jew that's engaged in international finance, and everybody else that's engaged in international finance on a large scale outside of the United States, at your expense, is either going to have to dump all of these assets in gold by the 1st of June, or he's going to lose his citizenship, and he's going to be a felon and go to jail when he comes back. Now, I know some of these people, if they have to be torn between their ability to come back and forth in America and let go of their gold, they'll hang on to their gold and never come back. And you know, with all our cry about gold, if we could get rid of all the enemies of Jesus Christ and just systemize us all the gold we've got, then I would not be too great a price to pay to get that back. I've often looked at all the things God had promised to do for us. He promised to bless Isaac and Jacob. He promised to bless Job. He promised to bless you and I with all the future things that would come out of the soil and all the things that were necessary. He promised to increase their crops, to bless their grain, to increase their houses, and to let them build new rooms, and to give them all these blessings. But there was one place anywhere where God says, I'm going to heap on the power of gold. Did you know that? But you can go through this book and babbling, very clean on gold in the head of gold. The kingdom of God doesn't eat it, you can't eat it, you can wear it, it does look pretty maybe. But let me tell you something. You would be far better off if they had all the gold and sat around it in some far off place while God blessed you with all the things that are really there from the hidden economy, from now and forevermore to the standards of God, and threw out all the unclean tribes because you cut off the one operation by which they lead, and that's the manipulation of money, for the love of money is the root of all evil. And then your gold would become crumbs because it would no longer be gold. There would be something inside in the power of a different nature, spiritual gold of new value and of new vitality. So you see unclean tribes represent the sum total of these forces which gather men to their inevitable destiny. Statesmanship cannot avoid it, and true statesmanship should be fair to win it. And I will say that the president did say we're going to get strong, militarily strong, we better get strong. If there's any defense minister in the United States that doesn't work for this only, we ought to remove him as quickly as possible and send him somebody that does do it, then I'll get him strong. If someone says you can't afford it, let me tell you something. That whole thing is one of the most fantastic things in the world. There is nothing that you can make in America you can't afford. Do you know that?
There is nothing that poor America can make you can't afford. They will say, oh, I've been taught that this is too expensive, or I can't afford it. That's because Babylon's been your master. But anything you can make and you can afford, because you can make the money to buy it with, and you can make the money to pay for its construction, and you can enjoy the work of your hands and the coordinated endeavors of your society. And under the kingdom of God, the great new era that stands before you is going to be one of prosperity and division. If this president is not to the first, God's going to replace him with a bandit rule. But we're going on the road to the greatest destiny of the world. Get along, and the world's got to understand. The nations of God's kingdom are going to top down to the liberation, and the powers of darkness are going to be blasted by the Spirit of God. Some people said, I'm looking for a great revival, well, so am I. They say, I'm looking for an outpouring of God's Spirit, so am I. But that's going to pop into them somebody's tent. They're not going to hear Saul or Sawyer. This Spirit of God's going to stimulate the inside consciousness of their soul. It's going to cause their minds to work with clearness. It's going to give them a blueprint of God's plan. It's going to show them how to handle the things that He's given them in stewardship. And it's going to turn them with a great cry of thanks and praise the unto God, who has delivered us from all the powers of darkness and the forces of Babylon forever. And they're going to sing the song of Moses and the Lamb. And I'm going to tell you that that's going to transpire in this nation of God's kingdom. I think you're on that level.